Sri Aurobindo, Synthesis of Yoga, continuing with part one, The Yoga of Divine Works, and chapter 7, Standards of Conduct and Spiritual Freedom, the top of page 203. The later religions endeavor to fix the type of a supreme truth of conduct, erect a system, and declare God's law through the mouth of avatar or prophet. These systems, more powerful and dynamic than the dry ethical idea, are yet, for the most part, no more than idealistic glorifications of the moral principle sanctified by religious emotion and the label of a superhuman origin. Some, like the extreme Christian ethic, are rejected by nature because they insist unworkably on an impracticable absolute rule. Others prove in the end to be evolutionary compromises and become obsolete in the march of time. The true divine law, unlike these mental counterfeits, cannot be a system of rigid ethical determinations that press into their cast iron molds all our life movements. The law divine is truth of life and truth of the spirit and must take up with the free living plasticity and inspire with the direct touch of its eternal light each step of our action and all the complexity of our life issues. It must act not as a rule and formula, but as an enveloping and penetrating conscious presence that determines all our thoughts, activities, feelings, impulsions of will by its infallible power and knowledge. The older religions erected their rule of the wise, their dicta of Manu or Confucius, a complex shastra in which they attempted to combine the social rule and moral law with the declaration of certain eternal principles of our highest nature in some kind of uniting amalgam. All three were treated on the same ground as equally the expression of everlasting verities, Sanatana Dharma. But two of these elements are evolutionary and valid for a time, mental constructions, human readings of the will of the eternal. The third, attached and subdued to certain social and moral formulas, had to share the fortunes of its forms. Either the shastra grows obsolete and has to be progressively changed or finally cast away, or else it stands as a rigid barrier to the self-development of the individual and the race. The shastra erects a collective and external standard. It ignores the inner nature of the individual, the indeterminable elements of a secret spiritual force within him. But the nature of the individual will not be ignored. Its demand is inexorable. The unrestrained indulgence of his outer impulses leads to anarchy and dissolution. But the suppression and coercion of his soul's freedom by a fixed and mechanical rule spells stagnation or an inner death. Not this coercion or determination from outside, but the free discovery of his highest spirit and the truth of an eternal movement is the supreme thing that he has to discover. The higher ethical law is discovered by the individual in his mind and will and psychic sense and then extended to the race. The supreme law also must be discovered by the individual in his spirit. Then only, through a spiritual influence and not by the mental idea, can it be extended to others. A moral law can be imposed as a rule or an ideal on numbers of men who have not attained that level of consciousness or that fineness of mind and will and psychic sense in which it can become a reality to them and a living force. As an ideal, it can be revered without any need of practice. As a rule, it can be observed in its outsides, even if the inner sense is missed altogether. The supramental and spiritual life cannot be mechanized in this way. It cannot be turned into a mental ideal or an external rule. It has its own great lines, but these must be made real, must be the workings of an active power felt in the individual's consciousness and the transcriptions of an eternal truth, powerful to transform mind, life, and body. And because it is thus real, effective, imperative, the generalization of the supramental consciousness and the spiritual life is the sole force that can lead to individual and collective perfection in Earth's highest creatures. Only by our coming into constant touch with the divine consciousness and its absolute truth can some form of the conscious divine, the dynamic absolute, take up our earth existence and transform its strife, stumbling, sufferings, and falsities into an image of the supreme light, power, and ananda. The culmination of the soul's constant touch with the supreme is that self-giving, which we call surrender, to the divine will, and emergence of the separated ego in the one who is all. A vast universality of soul and an intense unity with all is the base and fixed condition of the supramental consciousness and spiritual life. In that universality and unity alone can we find the supreme law of the divine manifestation in the life of the embodied spirit. In that alone can we discover the supreme motion and right play of our individual nature. In that alone can all these lower discords resolve themselves into a victorious harmony of the true relations between manifested beings, who are portions of the one Godhead, and children of one universal mother. All conduct and action are part of the movement of a power, a force, infinite and divine in its origin and secret sense and will, even though the forms of it we see seem inconscient or ignorant, material, vital, mental, finite, which is working to bring out progressively something of the divine and infinite in the obscurity of the individual and collective nature. This power is leading towards the light, but still through the ignorance. It leads man first through his needs and desires. It guides him next through enlarged needs and desires, modified and enlightened by a mental and moral ideal. It is preparing to lead him to a spiritual realization that overrides these things, and yet fulfills and reconciles them in all that is divinely true in their spirit and purpose. It transforms the needs and desires into a divine will and ananda. It transforms the mental and moral aspiration into the powers of truth and perfection that are beyond them. It substitutes for the divided straining of the individual nature, for the passion and strife of the separate ego, the calm, profound, harmonious, and happy law of the universalized person within us, the central being, the spirit that is a portion of the Supreme Spirit. this true person in us, because it is universal, does not seek its separate gratification, but only asks in its outward expression in nature its growth to its real stature, the expression of its inner divine self, that transcendent spiritual power and presence within it, which is one with all, and in sympathy with each thing and creature, and with all the collective personalities and powers of the divine existence. And yet, it transcends them, and is not bound by the egoism of any creature or collectivity, or limited by the ignorant controls of their lower nature. This is the high realization in front of all our seeking and striving, and it gives the sure promise of a perfect reconciliation and transmutation of all the elements of our nature. A pure, total, and flawless action is possible only when that is effected and we have reached the height of this secret Godhead within us. The perfect supramental action will not follow any single principle or limited rule. It is not likely to satisfy the standard either of the individual egoist or of any organized group mind. It will conform to the demand neither of the positive, practical man of the world, nor of the formal moralist, nor of the patriot, nor of the sentimental philanthropist, nor of the idealizing philosopher. It will proceed by a spontaneous outflowing from the summits in the totality of an illumined and uplifted being, will, and knowledge, and not by the selected, calculated, and standardized action, which is all that the intellectual reason or ethical will can achieve. Its sole aim will be the expression of the divine in us, and the keeping together of the world and its progress towards the manifestation that is to be. This even will not be so much an aim and purpose as a spontaneous law of the being, and an intuitive determination of the action by the light of the divine truth and its automatic influence. It will proceed, like the action of nature, from a total will and knowledge behind her, but a will and knowledge enlightened in a conscious supreme nature, and no longer obscure in this ignorant prakriti. It will be an action not bound by the dualities, but full and large in the spirit's impartial joy of existence. The happy and inspired movement of a divine power and wisdom, guiding and impelling us, will replace the perplexities and stumblings of the suffering and ignorant ego. If, by some miracle of divine intervention, all mankind at once could be raised to this level, we should have something on earth like the golden age of the traditions, Satya Yuga, the age of truth, or true existence. For the sign of the Satya Yuga is that the law is spontaneous and conscious in each creature and does its own works in a perfect harmony and freedom. Unity and universality, not separative division, would be the foundation of the consciousness of the race. Love would be absolute. Equality would be consistent with hierarchy and perfect indifference. Absolute justice would be secured by the spontaneous action of the being in harmony with the truth of things, and the truth of himself and others, and therefore sure of true and right result. Right reason, no longer mental but supramental, would be satisfied not by the observation of artificial standards, but by the free automatic perception of right relations and their inevitable execution in the act. The quarrel between the individual and society, or disastrous struggle between one community and another, could not exist. The cosmic consciousness embedded in embodied beings would assure harmonious diversity in oneness. In the actual state of humanity, it is the individual who must climb to this height as a pioneer and precursor. His isolation will necessarily give a determination and a form to his outward activities that must be quite other than those of a consciously divine collective action. The inner state, the root of his acts, will be the same. But the acts themselves may well be very different from what they would be on an earth liberated from ignorance. Nevertheless, his consciousness and the divine mechanism of his conduct, if such a word can be used of so free a thing, would be such as has been described, free from that subjection to vital impurity and desire and wrong impulse, which we call sin, unbound by that rule of prescribed moral formulas, which we call virtue, spontaneously sure and pure and perfect in a greater consciousness than the mind's, governed in all its steps by the light and truth of the Spirit. But if a collectivity or a group could be formed of those who had reached the supramental perfection, there indeed some divine creation could take shape. A new earth could descend that would be a new heaven. A world of supramental light could be created here amidst the receding darkness of this terrestrial ignorance. End of Chapter 7, Standards of Conduct and Spiritual Freedom, bottom of page 207.